You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A brief program note. The Bush administration has announced plans to loosen restrictions on same-sex education. Join Neil Conan for a discussion of the pros and cons of same-sex ed. That's on the next Talk of the Nation on Monday from NPR News. We're going to finish up this hour by talking with, a person you're probably familiar with, a scientist, genomics pioneer, Craig Venter. You'd have to say that he is certainly somebody who thinks outside the box. And now he has embarked on an unconventional expedition that he says was inspired by the voyages of Darwin's Beagle and the HMS Challenger. And like Darwin, he is sailing the seas in the name of science. Dr. Venter and scientists aboard his yacht, the Sorcerer II, say they're collecting microbes from deep in the ocean, from Maine to the Galapagos and beyond, and their mission is to sequence the genomes of entire microbial ecosystems. Traveling the world, filtering seawater sounds pretty nice, and if it's fruitful, judging by the results of the pilot study, it certainly is. In the Sargasso Sea off the coast of Bermuda, Venter and his colleagues say they've discovered a million new genes and thousands of new species of microorganisms. What does all of this mean? What can we do with this flood of genetic information? Joining me now is Dr. J. Craig Venter, president of the Institute for Biological Energy Alternatives and the Center for the Advancement of Genomics in Rockville. He joins us from our NPR studios. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Venter.
Oh, thank you, Ira. It's nice to be back with you.
Thank you. How did you get interested in the marine world?
Well, I think I've always been interested in it from my early days as a surfer, and then I sail in the ocean all the time. I always wanted a way to combine the science I was doing with characterization of the oceans. We just didn't imagine at the time making such numerous breakthroughs in such a short period of time.
Mm-hmm. What do you foresee out of looking for all this DNA in the oceans? What can we do with all of it if we find all of it?
Well, there's so many different aspects of it, from understanding evolution from the components that are there. We're trying to create a giant database for everybody to use that gives us a chance to catalog the gene pool on planet Earth. Here we are looking for life on Mars, and we know less than 1% of life on the planet Earth. So if we found something on Mars, we wouldn't know if it was the same or different of something that exists here. Mm-hmm. 99% of the species in the ocean, people don't even know that they exist, let alone have a way to characterize them. We've only looked at species that can be isolated or grown in culture. What we've done is taken the shotgun sequencing method that I developed for sequencing the genomes of many species, including our own, where we just take all the DNA from a section of the ocean, sequence, in the case of the Sargasso Sea, 2 million sequences, and we analyzed it, and we're just stunned with the findings. But, for example, with the carbon cycle, scientists know that the ocean is one of the biggest carbon sinks and essential for life on this planet, with moving carbon in and out of the atmosphere. Yet the biology is treated as a black box because nobody's known what pathways are there, how this really happens. And I think one of the biggest findings we had is all these new photoreceptors. Maybe half or more of the organisms deal with the sunlight for their source of energy or metabolism, versus what was thought to be only a tiny handful of the organisms doing that. So the discoveries are really mounting.
How much, and let me give out the number, 1-800-989-8255. How big a sample did you have water, did you have to take? Give us an example, for example, in the Sargasso Sea. You say you got millions of genes out of this. And how big a sample was it?
So the samples are relatively small. They're 200 liters, so it'd be like a 50-gallon oil drum of seawater. What surprises most people is that each milliliter of seawater has about 1 million bacteria and 10 million viruses. And I always tell people, next time you're swimming in the ocean and you swallow a mouthful of water, to keep in mind that you swallow just about 10 to 100 million organisms of various types. It's rich with life because it's invisible to us. We haven't been able to characterize much of it.
And, you know, a few weeks ago, we had Dr. Jo Handelsman, who was in Wisconsin, and she goes into her backyard with a bucket and a shovel and sifts through the soil, basically doing the same thing, pulling all of this genetic material out of it. Because she said to us, you know, 99% of this we can't culture in the laboratory. You just got to get the genetics out of it. That's exactly what you seem to be doing, but in the oceans.
Well, we're doing the oceans and the soil. In fact, she's part of our advisory committee advising us on the different approaches to the soil biology. But this is just a new approach with the new tools of genomic sequencing, with these vast machines, with the supercomputers. We can now process more data than anybody a few years ago imagined. People were skeptical even 6 months ago when we were starting this project that the mathematics would be insurmountable. But it's worked better, I think, than anybody imagined. And I think this is going to be the approach to characterizing the environment in the future, because we now know who's there. And we can quantitate how they're changing with man-made insults or just with changes in the environment. We now have parameters to measure for the ultimate impact statements.
And how many places are you going to visit?
Well, as with the Challenger expedition in the 1870s, they took samples. They sent dredges down to the bottom of the ocean every 200 miles. In the 1870s, the view was there was no life below a certain depth in the ocean, and they were out to prove that wrong and to characterize life over 5 years around the ocean. They discovered over 5,000 new species. We're taking seawater samples roughly every 200 miles, but in unique locations such as the Galapagos, we've taken about 14 or 15 different samples from young islands, from old islands, from tops of volcanoes, from the bottom of salt ponds, from mangroves, and even hot sulfur vents bubbling out of the bottom of the ocean. So there's so many unique ecological niches there. We're anxious to see, do they all have their own several thousand unique species and millions of genes?
How far deep can you go? Can you get down to the Marianas Trench or any of that sort of stuff? Or is that not on your...
Well, not with the tools we have on Sorcerer 2. We're working with various groups to design remote vehicles that could go down and do that. But I'm also on the board of Woods Hole Oceanographic and Scripps Oceanographic Bermuda Biological Station that use deep submersibles that we think can be modified for really getting into the deep areas.
Well, that was my question. I mean, it's a big ocean, the Pacific, or either one of them, for one person to take on himself.
Well, it's amazing. So little of it has been characterized. The view in oceanography is, but there's been a few select sites that have been picked, and they've been studied over decades. The biological diversity we found was so vast, and the Sargasso Sea, even samples taken a mile apart and a day apart, had totally different sets of species in it.
Wow.
So our view was, why not try and just get a first ever assessment of the diversity in the oceans just by doing a complete circumnavigation? We think it's an important part of science education. We're trying to show young people that science can be extremely fun and extremely rewarding in terms of the discoveries that can be made.
So the Sargasso was sort of a test bed, a proof of concept here.
Yes, but it was a proof of principle. In fact, the Sargasso was supposed to be a simple site. It's a very low nutrients, so everybody was speculating that there were very few species there. And we thought, well, we'll start with a simple site and make sure these methods really work well. What we found, it was far more complex than most ever imagined. And the complexity was due to, I think, the ability to capture sunlight by these organisms and use that energy versus the nutrients, which are too sparse in that area. So the thinking is now changing. Perhaps the low-nutrient sites might have more diversity than when there's one abundant source of food for the organisms.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you found hundreds of new photoreceptor genes, genes that would cause, organisms to respond to light. Can you figure out why that might be? Has anybody speculated?
Well, I think the speculation is what I was just referring to, is because there was not the chemical constituents in the ocean in this area. It's like a vast desert almost, that there was not much to live on. So it looks like these organisms have really adapted to use sunlight as their energy source. There was only a few dozen of these known before a year ago. Ed DeLong out in Monterey discovered a fairly substantial number of new ones. But this goes up about five to six times over what was discovered last year. So it means we've not really understood at all the biology of the oceans, and that sunlight probably plays a far greater role and the most basic life forms than anybody ever imagined.
Talking with Dr. Venter, Craig Venter, this hour in Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Let's see if we can get a phone call or two in before we have to say goodbye. Let's go to Portland, Oregon. Steve in Portland, Oregon. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, hey, this is cool. I'm just curious, you've got this 50-gallon drum of seawater. Can you tell me the practical method for taking that, you know, out of the barrel, into the lab? How do you, process for the workers and the equipment in the lab? How does that work?
How do you make sure it's not contaminated and it is what you bring on board?
It's a great question. So we make sure the equipment's all sterile before we put it in the water. We pipe in 200 liters of seawater from whatever depth we're working, and then we just pump that seawater through a series of filters, first a 3 micron, a 0.8 micron, then a 0.1 micron filter to capture the different size single-cell organisms. Mm-hmm. The final sample is what goes through a 0.1 micron filter, and we collect that on a 50 kilodalton filter that catches all the viruses in the sea. We then just take these filters back to the genome sequencing lab in Rockville, isolate all the DNA, and then it became just like when we sequenced the human genome so rapidly. We just sequence 830 letters of genetic code from the ends of each of the pieces, and we did this roughly 2 million times and ended up with well over a billion base pairs of DNA sequence.
Hmm. Would you consider yourself more of a Darwin or as a Jacques Cousteau?
Well, either comparison is not bad for any scientist. I think it's just clear we're at the stage we can do what both Darwin and Cousteau did. They went out and made observations in nature and made major deductions from that. I've just come from the Galapagos, where I saw the same things that Darwin saw a little over 150 years ago. He made all his advances after he got back to England with the samples. He didn't come up with the theories while he was there. Mm-hmm. We have to sequence the DNA. We're going to find out what's new there, what's unique, how does it compare to the rest of the world. And maybe we'll come up with a global view of how all this evolution occurred, starting with these most basic elementary organisms.
Are you prepared to, as you go around the oceans, to sort of take a checkup on the health of these oceans that you're visiting to see how they're faring?
It's a wonderful question that I think we're already seeing the impact of human life on these different environments. Wherever cities don't use waste treatment and there's raw sewage going in, human pathogens end up in the sample versus the typical ocean microbes. We're looking at areas just off of Costa Rica. We found so much trash floating in the ocean. We found 50-gallon oil drums. We even found a floating refrigerator out there. We found miles of just plastic bottles and cans. So everywhere we go, we're seeing the effect of the population and what it's doing to the oceans. Now we can quantitate that with the actual changes in the life forms, measuring things in a very substantial way.
You know, you look at it that way, and you know, while you're doing the basic science there, what may get most of the attention is the kind of junk you're finding floating in the ocean.
Well, I think some of these organisms are so exciting, and they're going to give us a new view of life.
Yeah.
For example, we're finding that a theme is used over and over and over again in evolution. It's not like we have a million different solutions for each problem. These cells found something that worked really well. Each new cell, each new life form that came along picked up those same elements, modified them a little bit, but didn't change them much over billions of years of evolution. So we think we can actually get down to maybe what was the basic working set in the gene pool that all life derived from.
Wow, that's a great ambition. And good luck to you, and we'll have you back and get some more updates on what's going on.
It'd be wonderful to be back and talk to you. Thanks, Ira.
Thank you. J. Craig Venter, president of the Institute for Biological Energy Alternatives and the Center for the Advancement of Genomics, talking about his project of sampling the oceans and looking for the biology and the genes that are growing there. Kevin Wade is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick and Paul Masiello in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music. And we had help today from NPR librarians Kim Oleski and Alphonse Vinn. If you missed anything we talked about on Science Friday, any of the links, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. You'll also find Science Friday's Kids Connection there. And you can also download past editions on your audible.com player. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.